Hi, everybody. Welcome to We Gotta Talk. Today, we have a guest on We Gotta Talk about a guest who's helping us do a little healthy daydreaming. Part of my vision board in 2024 is all about Italy. You may be tired of hearing about it, but it's the truth. I've been taking my lessons for the past 5 years, always been a big part of my life, sort of culturally speaking, as an American Italian. But this past year, my family and I decided that we would begin the citizenship process. So make it official, make me and the children, and then eventually Andrew as well. It's like a whole separate process, but make us, hopefully, fingers crossed, Italian citizens. It's pretty much undoing the decades of work, the nearly century of work since my grandfather came to this country. And just kind of flipping the script. Anyhow, today's guest is helping us envision a future that, hey, might involve living part of your life in a different country. Jennifer Sontag is the founder of a dual citizenship agency called Italian Citizenship Concierge. She's an American who is now firmly planted in Sicily, in her own sort of ancestral area. Putting down roots in Italy when her family came over to the United States as well. So Jennifer's story is really interesting. Talk about experience all over the world. She's a former image consultant. She worked with A++++ people, Michelle Obama, Madeleine Albright. She was based in St. Louis. She decided she was in need of a change. She moved to Shanghai, where she taught business management at an elite international high school, came back to the States again and realized, you know what? I want to try this again, except I think I want to make it permanent. And from that point on, she researched her own process to become an Italian citizen. And now she is living full-time in Sicily, where she is helping other people get citizenship. So in this conversation, we talk about really the good, the bad, and like the ugly of picking up and moving across the world. There's a lot more good than bad and ugly, like spoiler alert, but there's some definite cultural changes that I think were a little bit eye-opening to me as an American who's starting this process. And I really loved talking with her about the reasons why she needed and felt like she had to make this change. And why and what she sees in other Americans who decide to sort of up and move, even if it's just for part of the year. So in this episode, we talk all about what it's like to live in Italy, of course, after growing up in America, her favorite spots, specifically in Sicily. I didn't realize this before I started my own Italian lessons with my friend who's a native Italian, probably 4.5 years ago, but Sicilians consider themselves like more than just Italian. It's like a very strong identity. I don't want to speak for native Italians in any way, but I just didn't realize how like differently Sicilians thought of themselves than like a regular mainland Italian. So we talk all about these sort of nuances in Italian culture that I was only recently made aware of, and how sort of people self-identify regionally, and what's so special about Sicily, why she landed there, her favorite spots to go to. As you know, if you watched the second season of White Lotus, Sicily just exploded onto the tourism map after it was filmed there. So she tells me all about, she tells us all about like the real spots you have to check out, why the way that was shot was kind of deceiving. She talks, of course, we dedicate a lot of time about how to start the dual citizenship process to Italy. Here's something you're going to want to sort of flag and mark and come back to. That's really different depending on which path you're taking. There are essentially two different ways to get citizenship. So in this episode, Jennifer walks us through what one path could look like versus the other path. And it's all dependent on what ancestor you are using to get citizenship, kind of working through to get your paperwork. We also talk about the websites she suggests starting on if you want to go down this path, the simple things you can do for free to start out and see if it's even a fit. And we get into, pretty much all the nitty-gritty of what the process is like, but more importantly, all of the great cultural things and life things she's experienced since moving there. So I hope you enjoy this episode. If this is something you have been considering, this is a great place to start. Jennifer will walk you through some serious details about what it's like to actually apply. And what I didn't realize was the amount of translation and paperwork that's involved. So just a heads up, if you're going to start this, it does help to work with a qualified professional, because unless you are fluent in Italian and you got some connections to some attorneys over there, it can get a little complicated. So we talk about, of course, the benefits working with an agency. I hope you guys enjoy this episode and take from it just as much as I did. I'll put all relevant information in show notes. And that's it. Enjoy this interview with Jennifer Sontag. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Sunny, for having me.
I mean, talk about, I know it probably didn't feel this seamless or cool while you were in the middle of moving and packing boxes or wrapping up one chapter of life and going to the next, but what's it like? What's it like you're on the other end of multiple international moves, and it seems that you feel settled at the moment. Are you happy?
I'm very happy. I can't imagine going back to my old life, honestly.
That
far away. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's just start there and we'll go back to do more cultural sort of comparisons and contrasting between America and the rest of the world. But since we're there now, like, what's better? We know the food's better in Italy. What are you thriving on right now?
I'm thriving on the relationships.
Tell me more.
The connection. So, you know, in Italy, it's all about relationships. It's family-based, but in Italy, everybody is your family. Everyone is cugina, right? Everybody is the cousin. And it really is like that in Italy. It's not something just that our great grandparents told us and talked about, you know, these big extended families. I came back, and when I moved to Italy, I first moved to a very small town of 1,800 people during COVID. So we were not allowed out of the town. It was, that town had 10 cases of COVID. And so we were not allowed to circulate with the rest of the population. So it was kind of fun because I was able to actually meet my neighbors, and my neighbors took me in on my first holiday alone in Italy. It was Easter. I'm at home by myself. My neighbor knocked on my back door and brought me food.
Which we know is better than getting Papa John's, let's be honest.
let's be honest, it's better than me cooking, because I'm going to make a sandwich. I am not a cook. So it was going to be a Easter sandwich or some delicious roasted lamb and pastas with caponata and all of these delicious, delicious sweets and dolce. So, you know, it's really... this is a family that I've never had. So I think that is just so wonderful. My former landlord has become not only one of my very, very good friends, my confidant. I mean, we talk about that we're going to buy apartments a little closer to the sea when we get older and our children leave us. I mean, that is not something I would have encountered in middle America.
So where are you right now specifically?
I am specifically in a small town called Terracini. It's in Sicily, about 30 minutes out of Palermo. And this is actually the town that, where are they? My great-grandparents emigrated from in 1902.
Okay, and so you are all, are, I don't, not that, I, we Italian Americans get a little exclusive with our ancestry. So let me just be more inclusive here. Are you mostly Italian? And were you always really in touch with that side?
So I am, according to my DNA, because I did 23andMe, mm-hmm. Sorry, a little plug for you guys. I am 50%, 49.8% Italian, and 48% German, and a little touch of mixtures, you know, just a little of this, a little of that. So growing up, my maternal side is Italian or Sicilian specifically.
Right.
And that's the side I was always in touch with. I grew up with my cousins. I grew up with my mom's aunts, her cousins, you know, spending time at my grandma's. Thanksgiving was a Thanksgiving lasagna. It was not Thanksgiving turkey.
Yep. You're with you.
We did not eat American food. We ate pasta. Basta. Always the pasta. This was coming home. I actually found the bakery that used the same recipe for the cookies, the Reginelle cookies that my grandma used to make. And the first time I tasted them, it was like being an 8-year-old again in my grandma's kitchen. It is literally coming home for me.
I saw this this reel on Instagram the other day, and I'm also, I mean, my audience is probably so sick of hearing me say this, but here we are, Italian abroad. I'm 96% Italian, right? But I used to think it was a joke. I was like, we gotta be something else. We are 4% North African, but other than that, anyway. So similarly, we were immersed in this Italian American culture growing up, and I think it's not unique to this culture at all, but it remains one of those cultures that still desires to go back to the homeland, in America at least. Like I'm sure some of it is we're romanticizing it. There are some things that I'm certain, and we'll talk about them, that are more difficult or challenging. But what do you think it is about that particular connection that we as Italian Americans or people in that group have with the motherland, with the homeland, with the place where our grandparents came from, that makes us always want to go back? Does it come back to just what you said, the feeling of community and family, or what is it for you?
So it is that community and family, but it's also what our ancestors were told. Mm. So I've done a lot of research on this. I've talked to a lot of people, and the particular town that I live in, there are probably good 15-20% had left, went to America, made some money, and then come back. Mm. And when this all happened, you know, Italy was not a country until 1861. Sorry, I'm going to give a quick history lesson here.
Go for it.
It's a very new country. Italy was formed in 1861. So when Italy was formed, and particularly for us Sicilians that came from the Kingdom of Two Sicilies in the south, the money centralized into Rome. And so the south in Sicily was starved of money. And suddenly people that had jobs no longer had jobs. They no longer had income. So they were sent off abroad, and they were told by the government, go make money, come back, and your children will always be Italian. So for many of our ancestors, they never intended to stay in America. America was a place to go make money and then return. And so, you know, things happened that didn't always happen. Some returned. Over 50% returned.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, 50% actually returned from the first, second, and third diaspora that had left. So
that's all new to me. Yeah, I think the immigrant experience is so unique in America because if you've lived close enough in proximity, emotional proximity to someone who was an immigrant, your mind is really seared with, at least in our case, this urgency to succeed. Like, we came here for a reason. You will go to college. You will do better. Now, for my family, it was staying in America. They established businesses that had, you know, they wanted to keep roots. And I just think it's really funny how I'm kind of ready to undo all the hard work that my grandparents and great grandparents did. Not that we'll be moving there forever, but this desire I have to go back to my roots. Sometimes I'm like, I'm sorry, Pap, you know, like, I know you gave so much to come here and all I want to do is go back. But I'm sure there's a balance to strike there too.
There is. And there's so many families that, like my family, my great-grandparents, my grandparents didn't learn English. They had no intention of staying. They spoke Sicilian because, again, this was a very young country. Italian, as it is, didn't exist in Sicily. They spoke Sicilian. And so, you know, coming back, I speak, you know, some Sicilian words. I knew more Sicilian words than I knew Italian words upon arriving.
And that's what I didn't realize either, is that I've been taking Italian lessons with a native Italian for probably 5 years now. She's a close friend, a dear friend of mine that I just adore. And in addition to doing the lessons, we talk a lot about, you know, what it's like living there. And I didn't realize how psychologically different Sicilians consider themselves from the rest of Italy. And even in within the mainland itself, how the Southern Italians self-identify in one way, just like here, right? Where you have the South and you have the Northeast and you have the Mid, every region has a different vibe. I was like, wow. And Sicily in particular, I was so ignorant of the fact that a lot of them, and correct me if I'm wrong, sort of view themselves at, like, it's its own separate thing. Yes. It's a prideful thing too, in a good way.
Yes, it's actually structurally different. Sicily is the only region that we have our own president. So we're an autonomous region. So Sicily is different because of the compromise basically that was made in the unification and then reinforced through World War II when the Sicilians did not want to be a part of Mussolini's actions and they had asked both the UK and the US to annex them. Now, pipe dreams never going to happen. Sicily was never going to be a territory of the US or UK, but the Sicilians felt like they were more aligned with the US and UK than they were with mainland Italy. So when you ask a Sicilian, are you Italian? They'll say, yes, but I am Sicilian first.
Wow. That's so that sort of persists until today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, you know, because we were independent countries. So it's a little bit different than the US that the US, you know, was not the Southeast, the Northeast, those were not independent countries, but Kingdom of Two Sicilies was a very different country than some of, you know, around Trentino, around, you know, Milan. Those were all independent countries. And so Sicily, 1861, still very, very new. And different dialects, different languages. Sicilian is an independent language. It is not a dialect. It has dialects within it, but, you know, it is its own place.
So all of these lessons I'm taking, Jennifer, are going to be for naught when I land in Sicily. I mean, I've used it in mainland Italy, but I'm going to be really struggling when I go to Sicily.
No, because, you know, now anymore, the language of instruction is Italian. Right. Sicilian is spoken in the home. Sicilian is spoken, you know, amongst friends, amongst family, but it's no longer the language of business.
So how long did it take you to learn and feel socially comfortable in your interactions?
I'm still learning. I'm still learning. When I arrived, I was speaking some Chinese and Spanish and had not even started on Italian. So I am still a work in progress, but I'm ambitious and I'm confident. So I speak. I get it wrong. Yesterday, I was in a restaurant. So there's this great dish called mussel soup. So it's, you know, a red tomato broth with mussels in it. And right. It's zuppa di cozze. Zuppa di cozze. Uh-huh. However, cazzo is very close to cozze. And so I ordered a soup of dicks.
Oh my God. They were like, happy to oblige, ma'am. Oh my God.
Goodness, I know the way here. Oh my God, thank goodness I know the waiter. And he just sat there giggling and laughing. He goes, Jennifer, I cannot give you that. God, no, that's not what I mean. I'm like, I've been in Spain for 3 weeks. I'm so sorry. Like,
yeah, you know what? It's
switched on yet.
Oh, that is his. So cote is the right one. The muscles.
The muscles, not the muscle.
Oh my gosh, Jennifer, I'm done. This is like something that I feel like I would do. And it's really like, you don't know what vulnerability feels like until you show up, try to speak a language that even technically you've been studying and speak to a native speaker. I have so much more sympathy and empathy for immigrants to America. Now I'm like, this is really, you're like in a full body sweat asking for a cappuccino. I'm like, this shouldn't be this hard. So I give you a lot of credit for going and trying to make it happen because that's commendable.
Yeah. I mean, the best thing you could do is laugh because if you get mortified, you're dead, right?
Oh my God, that's so funny.
You just laugh and go, oh, okay, what are we saying next?
So one more quick question about Sicily, then I want to dive into the dual citizenship process, which I know so many people have interest in. The new season of White Lotus came out. It was based at the Four Seasons in Sicily. And I'm sure, how annoyed are you that everyone wants to be in Sicily? It's like Taormina, it's like the new place to like, I mean, is it annoying? Because I feel like if I lived there, I would have been like, I've been here.
No, you know, what's great about it is I think Sicily is so undiscovered and for the Sicilians and a lot of my friends work in the tourism industry. So it's fantastic. We love it because you know what? There's so much more to Italy than Florence and Rome. Florence and Rome were absolutely gorgeous. But my clients that have spent time in Florence and Rome, they've come to Sicily, they've applied for their citizenship, you know, they go back and they travel in the north, they call and every single time they say, you know, I miss Sicily, it's real Italy. You're talking, you know, you're speaking Italian. Because even though, you know, our Italian may not be perfect, you can always spot that we're not native speakers. Mm-hmm. The Sicilians will slow down and try and understand you. They'll speak a little slower for you. In the north, they'll just go into English.
Yeah.
And so I mean, you might as well be at the mall you might as well be at Olive Garden.
I know.
You know, really. Because they're going to speak English to you.
The ultimate sin in Italian culture, Olive Garden. No. Yeah, it's true. I mean, that's the worst feeling. I would like be popping around and, you know, I'm the only one taking lessons. So I was really proud of the fact that I was like sort of speaking for my family and ordering. And sometimes they would talk to me back in English. And I was like, was it that bad? Come on. I'm trying, guys. I'm really trying. But it's a process. It's definitely
it is. It's a process. But I mean, I think that's the great thing about being here. And so I'm really happy to see, you know, that people are coming here.
Yeah.
You know, all of the attention on Tortamina, I kind of crack up because I actually don't like Tortamina. We, you know, as Sicilians, we refer to it as Disneyland.
Oh, stop.
It is so sanitized. It is one street. It has all of the, you know, the main shops, all of the chain stores on it, things like that. One side is flanked by a beautiful theater that's been modernized with big lights and stadium seating, you know, and the other side, you have the view of Enna. It's beautiful for about a half a day.
And then what?
And then move on. It's not even near the beach. That's the funniest part of White Lotus is that beach is on the other side of the island.
Oh, stop. Oh my gosh. So it was like very carefully shot to kind of imitate as if it were right on the water. Oh my gosh.
The beauty of TV, right? It's a fantasy. But hey, it's bringing people here and it's wonderful. And Sicily, there's so much to discover. Like I live 30 minutes away from a Greek temple and a Roman theater. I mean, I'm 90 minutes from the largest archaeological park in Europe that has more Greek ruins in it than in Greece in one area, about 90 minutes from my house. I mean, Sicily is just fantastic. The 90 minutes in another direction. I'm up. I'm not sure what the height is in the English, but it's a medieval town from the 10th century. Wow. And it's been inhabited since the 10th century. And it's absolutely a fairy tale and beautiful, beautiful castles. Sicily is fantastic. You know,
give us some, just say people are interested in planning something. And before we get onto the citizenship stuff, give us like the short list of places that we should be including on our itinerary.
Segesta. Segesta is the archaeological park that I talked about. Segesta, Selinunte is the bigger park. Selinunte, Segesta, Erice, San Vito Lo Capo has the most gorgeous, gorgeous beaches. The beach that was shown in White Lotus is Cefalù, absolutely gorgeous. But you go 30 minutes west of Cefalù and you have absolutely fantastic beaches without the tourist prices.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So there is a lot beyond, obviously, what we saw.
Absolutely. Modica. Modica is this beautiful old Baroque town, and they make this special chocolate that was brought from the Spanish in, I think it was the 1500s or 1600s, this wonderful chocolate from Mexico that's still made in the same process in Modica. Ragusa. One of my favorite towns is a little town called Shaka. And they still make pottery in the workshops. So as you're walking down the street, you can just walk in these little these pottery shops where they're throwing pots, glazing. There's just so much, much.
Yeah. Okay, can I ask you a personal question? Are you single?
Yes. I have a partner, but.
Okay, I was going to say, how's the Italian, you know, the ladies are going to wonder.
You know, the Italian men are always available, whether married.
That's a dignified way of saying it, Jennifer.
Sicilian men are wonderful. I have many, many Sicilian boyfriends in my stable.
That is so, I'm dying. I mean, we could do a whole episode, I'm sure, about that. Depending on what you wanted to share. But I had to throw that question in there for the ladies, because I know that the single ladies are like, hey, if I'm going to pick up and move to another country, might as well know what the male population is like.
Right. But the nice thing is, you know, with Italian citizenship, you have your option of 27 countries. So I found myself a Spaniard. So you're not limited.
Bravo, Jennifer, you've done well.
You can have a German, whatever flavor you like.
Oh my goodness. Okay, well, let's talk about citizenship, because there is a lot of interest, especially my friends back from where I'm from in Pittsburgh. They're like, tell us more about what it really looks like. We've heard for years, oh, you know, you can just apply and rip a few pages off your family tree, but it's not that simple, as we know. So yeah, tell us. And also, you started an agency of your own to help people with this process. So let's start at the very beginning and ask, what do you technically need? How do you qualify to apply for citizenship in Italy?
So to qualify, you need to have one, Italian ancestors, and you need to prove that that chain of ancestry has never broke their citizenship to Italy. And so to do that, what you need to do is show that the last Italian born in Italy, it's called the Lira, that your Lira maintained only Italian citizenship up until and beyond, just beyond the birth of their child. So, for example, great grandparents born in Italy, emigrated to the U.S. They arrived in the U.S. in early 1900s. Mm-hmm. My grandmother was born in 1912. They were still only Italian citizens. They were not American citizens at that point. Mm-hmm. So I had uninterrupted citizenship, because when my grandmother was born, her parents were still only Italian.
I got it. So it requires them not having the Italian relatives not having changed their citizenship status before having their child in America.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And then, of course, beyond that, you know, everyone has American
citizenship. And then beyond that, yes. And then beyond that, you know, you have to prove this with documentation. So my great grandparents eventually did naturalize, but they naturalized in the 1940s during World War II. So by that point, they had not only had my grandmother, they had 13 other children, and my grandmother had already had my mother. So I had a very clear path, but I had to get their naturalization documents from the U.S. Not an easy thing, because the U.S. during COVID had cut staffing at a lot of agencies, and they've never hired those jobs. And so some of those citizenship, those naturalization documents are taking 15, 16 months to receive from the U.S. government.
Oh, like at this point?
At this point, currently, as of today, some of those documents will take 16 months to get. In addition to that, you also then need to prove your chain of citizenship or chain of lineage. So birth certificates, marriage certificates, death certificates all need to be collected. They need to be corrected, because a lot of times Giuseppe became Joe, you know, Giovanna became Johnny. All of these names have to be corrected to match birth certificates. Mm-hmm. Once that is done, then you need what's called an apostille. An apostille is a very, it's a secondary certification under the Hague Convention that allows you to present a U.S. document from one of the 50 states in another country. So it sort of levels up that document to be presented abroad. And then once you have your original certificate, you have your apostille, now you're going to get some translations done, put that into Italian so the Italian government can read it.
Then the passport comes.
Well, then you have to either get a consulate appointment, which seems to need a bit of magic to get a consulate appointment.
Right.
If you're in the New York consulate, you're looking at a 15 to 20 year wait for the appointment.
Wait, pause. 15 to 20 years?
Yes.
As they say. Uh-huh. What? Okay. Let me ask you this. So what I discovered through this process is that we qualify for what's called a standard 1948 case, where they're proving the citizenship, like through the maternal. I could be getting this wrong. You know so much more about this, but I want to hear the process for this too. Because I thought by default I would have to be at the consulate and going through this, but with this sort of I don't want to call it, it's not a cheat code, but it's a different process that I didn't understand. So can you explain in the most basic of terms what that type of case is?
So a 1948 case is Italy, like most societies, was a very paternalistic society. Women could not pass their citizenship until 1948. So my family is actually split. So grandmother, great-grandfather is who I applied through. Great-grandfather, born in the 1800s in Italy, had my grandmother in 1912. My grandmother then had three children. My mother was the last. She was born in November of 1948. I missed that cutoff by 11 months because my grandmother could not transmit her citizenship to a child until January 1 of 1948. So her two older children born in the early 1940s are what's called 1948 cases. They have to go to the courts in Italy. An attorney will represent them in Italy, and they will sue the Italian government basically for misogyny.
You know what? It's very Italian woman to make you explain yourself. I guess the question is it essentially, I don't want to oversimplify it, but an easier process or just a little bit different than the first scenario?
No, it's just a different process. So the consulate process is probably the easiest if appointments were available. The consulate is the easiest and the cheapest if you can get an appointment. Because you go to the consulate, your only costs are going to be collecting and preparing all of those documents and then paying the Italian government a $300-ish dollar fee for processing. That's the easiest way.
Yeah.
Next is the 1948 case. The 1948 case is a little different because you also have the burden of proof to show you have no alternative. Mm-hmm. Many courts, since they've decentralized out of Rome, many courts are letting that go. But in the past, when it was centralized in Rome, they would make you prove to the court not only that you qualified for the 1948, but that you did not qualify male line.
Okay. So this makes sense. How much time all told, and we'll sort of classify this as first option, the consulate case, second options, like the 1948 case. I know it's going to vary by person, but if you were to give a general time frame, how much time does it take beginning to end for each of those?
It really depends. It depends on where your documents are. If your documents are in New York State has a lot of privacy laws. And so you have to get an Article 78 judgment by a judge. So that's going to involve lawyers to get vital records, to get your grandparents' records. In New York, you're going to have to sue the New York government to get those.
That's a drag.
Yes. If you have a case like mine, my family moved to St. Louis, basically stayed in St. Louis. I was able to collect all of my documents in 24 hours. So it really depends on where those documents are. Then on top of that, you have that naturalization document. If it's held by the USCIS, United States Citizen Immigration Services, I think it's called, it's going to take you 15 to 16 months to get that naturalization document. And then a few more months to get it all prepared. If it's at the National Archives, you're going to have it in a month or so. So it's all over. So you could be ready in a month or you could be ready in 2 to 3 years. And then you have to consider, are there inconsistencies? Are the names misspelled? Are the birth dates incorrect? All of that has to be fixed.
Yeah, it's been a real journey going back through even documents that we found on Ancestry.com. I mean, seeing the changing of names, like we had a big incident that happened in my family, personally speaking, and names were changed, not to be shady, but like, I was like, first of all, our family has got a few skeletons in the closet. And second of all, like, I don't know how I could ever, if I were doing this on my own, go from A to B. I mean, to me, from the consumer standpoint, if this is something you want to do, you got to go with a professional. I mean, the translation, the understanding of the process alone, but then on top of that, the translation or knowing where to go. And so that's why I ask about the specifics, because like, I think there's an expectation that, oh, I want this. It should be pretty easy to prove, you know, my grandfather came over and his records at Ellis Island. I learned that it's like really not that simple. So
it's really not that simple. And actually, you know, that's what so many people come to me and they're like, well, you know, he arrived on this date. And I'm like, I really don't care because that's not part of proving to the government. You know, it's a very new story. It's really interesting to find out. That's where I started of, you know, I wanted to see where my family signed in on Ellis Island, the ship and everything else. I spent 6 months on a rabbit hole that was a waste of time.
Yeah. Do you know now where to go, Jennifer? I mean, obviously you do. You have an agency, but like you have all your shortcuts kind of plugged in. Do you have to know people in each area that you're going to that kind of cut you to the, for lack of a better phrase, cut you to the front of the line?
No, but you need to know, you know, we have 50 different US states, right?
Right.
And I don't know if you've seen any of your documents yet, but every single state, every single county, every single city will allow you to request a document a little bit differently. But also once you get that document, the format is going to be a little different. So the information contained is going to be different. The burden of proof is a marriage certificate, but the marriage certificate must contain, you know, X, Y, and Z. Many marriage certificates, the state of Florida doesn't contain X, Y, and Z. So now you need to get a book copy of the marriage license. And if it was before this year, the book copy doesn't have it. So now you've got to contact, you know, the Secretary of State, and you've got to get a letter saying Florida doesn't have this information. We appreciate that you'd like that on there, but we just don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're collecting potentially, you know, 160 years worth of documents from 50 different states, from thousands of different counties, every one of them doing something different, trying to, you know, fit into this little round hole mm-hmm. that Italy has decided, because Italy's documents contain this. They just assume the US
right. And
Canada and Brazil and Argentina and everywhere else will have that. And it doesn't.
Okay. So let me ask you this. For the person who is at the very beginning of this process, expressing an interest and just wanting to see in general if they qualify, do you ever what websites, I don't know even if you do suggest this, but do you suggest you go to, is it worth it to do an ancestry.com and just try to plug in the basics? Or what is that very first step for people before they even decide if this is a match for them?
The first thing to do is go ancestry.com or a family search and start working backwards. You will know who your parents are. Your parents, you know, when you find their birth certificate, that's going to lead you to their parents. Work backwards on Ancestry and just start filling in the blanks and working backwards as far as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at the hints, making sure the dates match up, making sure the names match up. Look at the cities, get a map, because a lot of times people had very similar names or the same name. You know, Joe Smith appears a million times coming, you know, through New York. So you've got to make sure you have the right Joe Smith or Giovanni. You know, you've got to make sure you've got the right guy. Because so go back and look, and where does that document say they came from? If, you know, if you've always heard stories that your family's from Palermo, but suddenly you found Giovanni with the same name, but he's in Naples, probably not the right guy.
Yeah.
You know, it might be kind of close. So get a map. It's always shocking the number of people that come to me that haven't actually, you know, really done their due diligence. And, you know, and it's a shame because then they've like fallen into a totally different family. They've collected all this information on somebody else's family.
Oh, you're like, you might as well find them now and just pass it on. Oh, what a bummer. Oh my gosh.
Find those people and give them some info. But yeah, you know, So start and work backwards. Ancestry is fantastic. Family Search, I think, is a little bit better.
Okay.
Family Search has more records, and also Family Search is free. Ancestry has a 30-day free trial, which is really good. Do as much as you can. But then, you know, definitely Family Search. Another is called Fold 3. Fold 3 does require a membership.
Okay.
They'll also have some other records too.
Okay. So how much can this cost for someone? This is another question that I was getting when I was sharing what we're doing. I know there's going to be different tiers of packages, but tell people working with you specifically how that looks.
So working with us, we start with documents. Well, let me say this. We start all the way at the beginning, eligibility. If somebody comes to us and they say, look, I grew up, you know, in this big Italian family, I know my grandparents' names, I know where they came from, but I don't know if they actually naturalized. We start with something called eligibility. And that's where our researchers are going to go in do a deep dive, and they're going to find that naturalization document and determine if that line of citizenship was unbroken before the next child was born. Mm-hmm. And so we charge $350 for that, for eligibility.
Just to, yeah, check eligibility, check if this is even an option.
Yes, because that can take, I mean, just determining eligibility can take hours. You know, it can take 10 hours, depending on if the record's held. If it's actually harder to prove they didn't naturalize, because we'll search and search and search looking for these things. And then, you know, we have to go to the U.S. government and say, okay, send us something saying they did not naturalize. It's harder to prove. It takes more time to prove that they did not naturalize. So
interesting. Okay. Okay. So that process is, you know, that's the flat rate for that.
That's the flat rate for that.
And then you, from that point, discover what route you'll take for the citizenship. Yeah. And then, you know, again, no answers on how long it takes. It's just kind of all unique to each case.
Exactly. So from that point, then we have to sit down and we have to talk about, okay, where do you want to apply? Because every place that you apply has a different set of documents they want. There's 10 Italian consulates just in the U.S. All 10 of those consulates require something slightly different.
Ooh, that's annoying. Yeah. So even though we're all in the U.S. and a consulate basically is doing the same thing for you, they're requiring different documents.
Different documents prepared in different ways. So we need to know exactly where. So, you know, if you have family members that, you know, somebody lives in Florida, they're going to apply at the Miami consulate, and you have a sister that lives in San Francisco, they need two totally different sets of documents. There's going to be some of the base information is going to, or the base certificates are the same, but then each one wants some supplementary documents. Some will want censuses. Some will want spousal information that's out of line. If you're going to be a 1948 case, the courts will want something different. There's 26 courts in Italy that hear 1948 cases. Each one wants something slightly different.
So as we go on in our personal process, we'll only find out what that region specifically needs when we get to that point. Okay.
Yes. Yes. And your attorney will guide you on that, because your attorney knows exactly what that court wants.
So do you work in tandem too with Italian attorneys then regionally? And you kind of have to, right?
We have to. Yeah. Yeah. My business partner, Bettina Holm, she is Italian born and now lives in the U.S. So she went through the U.S. citizenship process like our ancestors did. She moved to the U.S. as an adult and went through that process. So she has a real understanding of what bureaucracy looks like on both ends. But she specializes in 1948 cases and preparing and collecting those documents.
Interesting. Okay.
That's her wheelhouse.
So if someone wants to begin to save for this, what is a good, and again, I know there's no specific answers, guys, so don't quote us on this, but we want to make sure that we have enough of a little nest egg to get through this. This could be even something people are saving for, say, as a present to a relative and say, listen, I set aside, what's a good amount of money that we should be just tucking away or working toward if this is something people are really interested in?
Sure. So if you're going to DIY and you're not going to engage with an agency, it's going to cost you about $1,000 just to collect all of your documents. By the time you collect and apostille your documents, if you're not in New York State, that's going to be extra. New York State is very expensive. You could spend $4,000 to $5,000 to get one document out of New York State by the time you hire an attorney. Then you have to go into translations. Translations will run you anywhere between $500 and $1,500 for your complete set of translations. If you go with an agency like us, and many other agencies, we base our prices on the number of generations because we know how many hours it takes. We've done this long enough that we know collecting documents for one generation, if it was your parents, versus, you know, like me, great parent, great grandparents, how long that's going to take to collect those. So I'd say if you're going with an agency, probably minimum, you're going to be spending about $1,500 on your documents up to maybe $10,000. There are agencies that I know of that are $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 to collect documents and prepare them for you. But, you know, it depends on the level of service you want. It depends on the number of inconsistencies that have to be corrected for those Giuseppes to Joes. You know, the last name changes, things like that.
Okay, so we need to be setting aside at a minimum 1500, all the way up to, if you want full level concierge, there is no limit, just kind of keep it in the 10K, not taking into consideration the conversion to euro that you're probably also going to have to factor in.
Okay. You might have to factor in the conversion to euro. You're going to have to collect a birth record at minimum from Italy. That's going to run you, you know, $100 to $200 to hire somebody to get that for you, unless you happen to be in Italy or get lucky to get an Italian bureaucrat to answer an email and send you what you need for free. Doesn't happen a lot. Then you get into 1948 cases. You've got to hire a lawyer. Minimum, you know, the cheapest 1948 attorney that I've seen recently is about 4,000. They go all the way up to 15, 20,000 to represent. If you decide you want to apply in Italy, that's what I do for our agency, is I help people who actually want to move to Italy and establish residency and do their application here because it's faster. So in Italy, when you arrive in Italy, from the time you arrive to citizenship is about 6 months. Versus the consulate, which is 2 years from appointment to recognition.
Wait, so you can just move to Italy and within 6 months be a citizen? Yeah. Why? You just have to establish.
You have to have all your documents. Yeah, you have to have all your documents. You have to rent a home. You know, so that's a process. So now you're talking living costs. You're talking like agency fees, you know, that you're going to pay somebody like me. Plus, you're going to have to pay rent, utilities, you know, food, flights back and forth.
Right. Okay. I think a lot of us have really been pulled in by this sort of Hollywood story of like, you know, you buy the house for it's only 25,000 euro for a house in a small village. And all you have to do is fix it up within 4 years. But like when you get there, you realize, oh gosh, there's so much more to it. It's never that easy of a process.
No. I mean, I think, you know, that's the thing. Hollywood makes it look so easy. Yeah. And so many articles, you know, in the papers of, you know, buy a 1 euro house. Well, of course, yes, you're buying a 1 euro house, but you get what you pay for, you know, so you get what you pay for. A 1 euro house, you're going to invest. No, you could fix a 1 euro house up for 20,000, or you could fix it up for 300,000.
Yeah, sure.
It's just like anywhere else, you know, how nice do you want it?
That's so interesting. How easy do you want it? So I feel like we covered a lot of the detail on specifics. So guys, go back and I'll put as much in show notes as I can. And Jennifer will send me her agency's info. What's the name of it too, if people are just driving and want to Google when they get to a red light?
It's Italian Citizenship Concierge.
Italian Citizenship Concierge. Okay, so we got the basic info out there, how it looks. I want to get back to how it is living there, Jennifer, and how you, I know we started off the episode talking about all of the amazing things, the sense of community, the food, the access to travel to other places. But what's one thing you would tell a fellow American about, what's that one thing you would say to kind of get them to consider moving?
I think the biggest difference for me is I always get this backwards. I can work to live, not live to work. Mm-hmm. I have a balance. So, you know, it's New Year's, right? Everything is all about balance and resetting, setting those intentions for the year, giving yourself more personal space, more time for personal growth. I can actually live that. My resolutions actually can be acted upon and accomplished in the year. You know, I think that's the biggest thing is people here, when you meet somebody, they're not going to ask what you do. There's many, many people that I know, and I've talked to Sicilians and I've talked to other Italians about this. They have no idea what their neighbor does, what their best friend does for work. What? Because
they define themselves that way.
Because people are not defined by their jobs.
Right.
Your job is just what you do to keep, you know, money over in your pocket and a roof over your head, but that doesn't define who you are. And so there's this really nice balance. So if you're at that point where you want balance and sanity in your life and a new kind of chaos.
What's the chaos? The parking, the roads, the lack of space. Like, what is the chaos?
The bureaucracy, the roads, it's loud. It's, you know, it's a new language. It's a new culture. I mean, these are the things that challenge me and stress me are, you know, oh, how do I say this? How do I say this? Not, you know, oh my God, I have 5,000 meetings and I have to work 12 hours today and I've got to work all weekend and I don't get a vacation. I mean, I just came off of 3 weeks of vacation.
Yeah.
For the holidays. The kids, you know, I live right next to an elementary school. This is why, you know, when we were talking, I said, oh, your kids just went back to school today because Italian schools just started this week. You know,
I mean,
they didn't go back until the 10th.
They are literally my people, but also like, so my people, you know, deadlines are to be, you know, finagled with. We're a little more about, you know, the enjoying of life rather than rigidity. Or I worry though, Jennifer, because, you know, it's a personal goal of mine and my family's to be able, that's why we're doing this, to spend extended periods of time over there, reconnect with our roots. But I worry that I'm romanticizing it. I know at the end of the day, life is life and you have stress wherever you go. Do you ever regret it? Or what would you say would be the things that most born Americans would say, it's going to be different when you go to Italy, watch out for XYZ. What would those be?
It would be watch out for bringing America with you and bringing your American ideals with you. You're not in America. You know the saying, you're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy?
Mm-hmm.
You are not in America anymore.
So what does that mean? Like,
it means, you know what? You're going to have to slow down.
Yeah.
You know, Italians are rigid in certain ways.
Like how?
Bureaucracy, you know, they expect like documents that we were talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Their documents are exact from top to bottom since the 1800s. Their documents all contain the same thing every time in the same way in 8,000 different towns. You know, that's where they're rigid. They're rigid in that sort of back-end bureaucracy.
Right.
They're rigid in the afternoon, you take a break. In August.
My kind of rigidity.
Yeah. You take the month of August off. Everything closes for the month of August because that is vacation. That is the rigidity. Holidays are spent with family. But what you're going to lose is driving through Starbucks, going, you know, into Target to return something and being able to, you know, kind of carrying your way through a return or something like that. That's not going to happen here.
Wait, you can't return stuff, or they just like put up more of a fight? What is it?
Their returns are very different.
That's a small, interesting thing I never would have anticipated.
Yeah, you don't get refunds. That doesn't exist here. It's going to be a store credit. And this is really a struggle. Because I bring Americans here. So right now at this moment, I currently have 8 active applicants, you know, living around me, like within an hour circle of me applying and stuff. And I crack up every time I get this call of, I just ran into the store and I bought these sheets. I got them home and they don't fit. Now they're not going to give me a refund. And I'm like, yes, because refunds don't exist here.
Oh my God. So little things like that. I mean, something I noticed traveling too is like the anxiety I have just on the roads. I'm like, we're going to fall off a cliff. Or it's even in the landlocked areas, everything's just smaller,
it's
right?
So you tiny.
Know, tiny, tiny.
Yeah. And, you know, driving, you're going to need to learn how to drive a manual, or you're going to be paying more for an automatic. Cars are smaller. Cars are not a status symbol. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that like your house is not a status symbol here.
Mm-hmm. It's how you live. Yeah. It's just how
nobody,
you live. Yeah.
Nobody cares what kind of house you have. Nobody cares what kind of car you drive. You're not impressing them. You know, what they care about is who you are as a person. They want to talk to you about art. They want to talk about culture. They want to talk about where'd you go on vacation? You know, hey, have you seen this person? Did you go to the gym? You know, what are you eating tonight? Oh, share this recipe. It's very different. It's not materialistic. It's not this striver sort of culture.
It's just, and so
really, really hard. And it's funny because Americans are always like, oh, I want to get rid of that. And every one of them, those first few weeks, they struggle. No matter how much you want to give that up. And you're like, I want to, you know, Starbucks, right. I'm not doing that anymore. And, you know, within the first week I get a call going, where's a place that makes Frappuccino?
No, it's cardinal sin in Italy, right? There is no Frappuccino there, right?
There is now. There is now in Rome, and they have like half-hour lines.
They're like, what is this American version of? I mean, they're probably like throwing up drinking it. It sounds too good to be true. But because all the things you're saying, like are what life is about ultimately, right? It's about your people. It's about the food you eat and your health and the connections. And I love that. And I worry that should we make that leap for any period of time, whether it's, you know, a month or two or a year, it will feel like a deprogramming in a sense.
It is. It is. And that's how I've referred to it many, many times, as my deep program.
Right. Right. It's so
really
funny.
It's hard for me to go back to the US. I really struggle because I think I lost you for a second. Sorry about that.
Can you hear me? Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. I think we can hear you again now.
I can. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the hard thing. Like I struggle when I go back to the US because I want to be able to just walk out the door, grab my bag and walk to the grocery store and grab a couple of things to make lunch. I did that at my parents' house, and my parents live in what's called a walkable community. My dad goes, well, are you too poor for a car? Like the grocery store is a 5-minute walk away. He's like, no, don't walk. The neighbors will talk about us.
Oh my gosh. That's hysterical. And that's funny that that's considered a walk for us. We're like, huh? Yeah, we are so spoiled here.
Yeah. We don't have sidewalks, you know, it's just not. Most suburban cities were not set up to be walkable like that. That was something, you know, that we made a conscious decision. It's just like food. Mm-hmm. The U.S. decided refrigeration and being able to ship food and have strawberries year round or have, you know, apples year round that always taste exactly the same.
Right.
That was important. That's not important in Italy. I eat strawberries once a year, you know, for
you
a couple
seasonally.
Of
weeks. Yeah, right.
Oranges. Right now, oranges, citrus is in season. I am eating all of the oranges I can get my hands on, and I won't see another orange, you know, for months.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's all very different for somebody coming from America. And, you know, some people are more prepared for it and more embracing of it. Others, it takes a little more time to kind of understand that and get that in their heads. I just had someone who was... she was buying pears. It was some sort of fruit. She goes, sweet potatoes. She goes, did you know about all these sweet potatoes? And she's like, what are these colors? I don't know. I've only ever seen orange sweet potatoes.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny.
And I felt bad because I'm like, oh yeah, I had that moment when I was in Shanghai and I saw 10 different kinds of bananas. I'm like, yeah, no, I totally get it. Because I had no idea there was more than just a Chiquita banana.
Just standard size. Yeah. Even moving to Florida, like the produce here, like we get like whatever, like the little bananas, you don't get, you know, it's different. It really. Okay. Wait, I got a quick question on Instagram that I want to address, Jennifer, before we wrap here. And this person is asking if you need to now know, and of course be tested on the language to become a citizen. She said she heard that's a new thing. Can you very briefly speak to that?
Sure. Through Iure Sanguinis, no, you were born Italian. All that is happening is you are being recognized. The Italian government doesn't know you exist.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, through Iure Sanguinis, no. If you married an Italian, yes.
Right. And from what my agency told me after, hopefully this happens and we, meaning me and the children, get our citizenship, if my husband wants then to also become a citizen, he would have to pass a basic language test, right? So it's for spouses who are also, okay.
Through marriage, iure matrimonio, he's going to need to, it is not a basic language test.
It's not basic?
No. It is B1. It is difficult.
Oh, no.
He will need to speak, read, and write in Italian. And it is tricky. I have clients that are going through it that have lived in Italy. They came through with the process. They're here on a long-term permission of stay as the spouse of an Italian citizen. And in one particular case, she's taken the test 3 times and she speaks beautifully, but the test is hard.
This makes me nervous. Well, not me, because I'm good. I'm gravy baby.
You're good.
He's going to forever have to go through the long line. The kids and I will cruise right through the EU checkpoint and he's going to be, it's going to be hard. It's going to make some big fights, Jennifer.
And the other challenge is you and the kids can stay longer than 90 days. He can only stay for 90 days unless you establish residency. This is something a lot of people don't think about.
So I'm glad you mentioned that. This is factoring into my vision boarding for 2024, five and beyond, because if I want to make this happen, I have to understand how to do it.
Exactly. So if you are going to establish residency and live in Italy or live in another EU state by taking residency, he can then get a permission to stay as a foreign citizen married to an Italian. However, if you think you're going to come and travel multiple places without ever establishing residency beyond 90 days, your husband's going to have to leave. You're going to have to find yourself a new Italian boyfriend.
Oh my gosh, don't say it.
I've got a few extras. I'll throw them to you. I'll give you an extra.
He's a good guy. Not a drop of Italian blood in him, but best guy. You know, actually technically a drop, like 0.4%. I laugh all the time. I'm like, you have a grandmother who actually came from Italy. I don't know how you did not actually acquire any of that blood. It's the weirdest thing, but okay. Yeah.
I mean, that should be looked into. Or if he's Irish, Ireland has a similar program. There's some other options. There's some other options, but he would need to establish residency alongside you in order to be here longer than 90 days without citizenship.
So much planning to do. Well, this helps me formulate my budget for the next 5 years. So thank you for explaining that in detail.
No more problem.
Oh my goodness gracious. Jennifer, tell us how to connect with you for people who are interested in starting this process. What's your website and your social media, and how can we find you?
Sure. So our website is ItalianCitizenshipConcierge.com and Instagram, which go on Instagram. There's the cutest video from yesterday. And it's Italian_citizenship_concierge.
Okay. And just to be clear, you will do soup to nuts for people. You can go everything from basic services through the whole thing.
We do the whole thing. Now we coordinate, like you're going through a 1948 case. We prepare the documents and then we have several attorneys that we work with and we hand it off to that attorney to argue the case in court. That's the only thing we know too. Yep.
Okay. Good to know. Jennifer, thank you so much for taking the time to go through all the finer points and the details. I know this is like, was a longer interview, but I think every little thing you said is going to help some people sort of point in the right direction. So
So happy and so excited for you. That's so exciting. 1948 cases are great because you get to live your life, start packing up, making the vision board, saving for the move. You've got time while somebody else is doing the work.
That's right. You know what? It's going to be worth it because there's no way that I could handle the stress of everything you just said. So maybe we'll be neighbors one day. We'll see.
Love it. Love it. Come and visit me in Sicily. It's beautiful.
Love it. Jennifer, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sunny. Have a good day.
And everyone who watched on Instagram or YouTube or Facebook, thank you guys so much for joining as well. It's so fun to do these live. I was able to pop in a couple of questions that we got on the feed. So if you left one, thank you. Hopefully we answered your question. And that's it. We'll be back next week with more good stuff here on We Gotta Talk. Thank you again, guys, for listening. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of We Gotta Talk. Please leave a rating and review. 5-star ratings and reviews help a huge amount in getting this podcast out to people who might like it or find it useful. Thanks so much for your support of We Gotta Talk. Follow me on Instagram at Sunny Abatta and check out our latest blog posts at wegottatalk.com/blog.